gentleman from Oklahoma State University, and I'm going to share with you some of the things we've been doing in Oklahoma relative to preconditioning cattle, and I think it does fit very well with the previous session in low stress handling techniques. And what we need to do is combine the efforts, I think, to precondition calves as well as handling the best way possible to minimize stress, and we can probably further improve on some of the data that I'm going to share with you here today. Go ahead, Clay. It's really kind of interesting if you look back through the history of preconditioning, and we could go back even further than this, but I was fortunate to work in my office there at OSU with Dr. Don Gill for a few years, and Dr. Gill sponsored a program of veterinarians and animal scientists across the country in 1967. And in that conference, those guys talked a lot about pre-weaning, vaccination, and then they had separated conditioning calves, conditioning being things like training them to eat from a bunk, showing them how to drink out of a water trough, and implementing a balanced nutrition program would be included in that definition. But so they put those two terms together to sort of coin the term preconditioning at that time. And then throughout the 70s and 80s, there was really a major educational thrust to try to implement preconditioning programs across the country. And there were various state programs, some regional programs, and those mostly included some sort of what we now would think of as a process verification program. Many of those programs were self-verified, where the owner might just sign an affidavit, and many of them required the signature of a veterinarian. The typical process there during the early stages of these preconditioning programs included weaning vaccinations. Some of them included pre-weaning vaccinations, but not very many of them. And then many of them encouraged a 21 to 30 day minimum weaning period. And then at that time they recognized the value of weaning and dehorning. And then of course the process was verified with an affidavit in most cases. Okay, so what's really happened since then? Go ahead, Clay. Since that time, I guess I would characterize this issue as one that has been adopted from very slowly. If you think about 40 years now, there's been a pretty substantial effort to encourage people to adopt best management practices around the time of weaning. And the growth has been slow. Many of these certified preconditioning programs or process verification programs, if you will, have come and gone. Quality control, trust, and cow-calf producer motivation are major, major hurdles and have been. We've begun to overcome several of these hurdles with the new programs and data management processes that we have available now. But if you just think about trust and quality control from, say, the standpoint of five producers who choose to go to the trouble and expense of weaning their calves, doing a good job with the herd health program, double round of vaccinations, and so on. But one of those five guys cheats and doesn't do everything he said, maybe weans his calves a week ahead of the sale instead of 30 days. And then the buyer of those cattle, if he buys all five producers' calves, he's going to discover probably the wreck in the cattle of the producer that cheated. And so, of course, when he comes back to the market, he's not going to be very excited about paying a $6, $8, $10 per hundredweight premium for those cattle because he was burnt the previous time. And, of course, the four guys that did things right, they suffer the consequences because the buyer doesn't remember the good impacts and probably doesn't even know whose cattle were whose. And so what he remembers is a set of calves that he had 50% or 40% pull rate on and had to spend $20 to $30 a head on. Okay? And so, I think of this old phrase, we have met the enemy, and how's that go? We are them or they are us or something like that. And oftentimes, based on this quality control trust issue, we do seem to be our worst enemy. Okay, what about some of these hurdles? Lack of supplier enthusiasm is one reason why preconditioning programs have come about slowly here in the U.S. Most of these operations are smaller. In fact, a graph I'll show you here in just a minute shows that almost 50% of the calves that we produce come from operations of 100 cows or less. And if you think about the fact that many of those operations are not profit-centered, you know, their goal is to be in the cattle business and some own a nice piece of real estate. And it's not necessarily just to make a lot of money in the cattle business. Well, with today's land prices, that's a difficult thing to do regardless if you're profit-centered or not. But if you have, let's say the average herd size in Oklahoma is 38 head. And if we can assume that a producer has the opportunity to make an additional $20 by going through a preconditioning program that's maybe third-party certified, and at $20 a head, you know, that's $760 improvement in his income. But if you think about the trade-off, we're asking him to implement something that begins long before weaning, get those cattle in at maybe a couple of different times, probably process those calves through a set of facilities that in many cases is marginal. Certainly some of these low cattle handling stress techniques would improve his situation a great deal. But then feed those calves and manage those calves. A lot of smaller producers are scared to death of calves getting sick. They're not comfortable with treating sick calves and figuring out which calves are sick and need to be treated and which ones don't. They're just not experts at that. And so if they have to go out and take care of those cattle in the dark in the morning before they leave to go to work, and they get home at night, you know, after their son's football game, then they're probably not going to be very motivated by $760 if you consider all of those things. How important are those operations to you? Well, this is just the slide that indicates that we've got about half, go ahead, Clay, about half of our operations are in herds of 100 and less. Just click on through those if you would, please. About 30% of the cattle that we produce here in the U.S. are from herds of 50 cows and less, and another 19% are from herds of cows with 50 to 100 head. And so if you look at the long-term trend, that is declining very gradually. But I calculated this just the other day, just for fun. If I use the slope of the decline, by the time I retire, we'll still have about 43% of the calves produced in the United States by smaller operations. Okay, so what are some of the changes that have taken place? And now it appears that preconditioning is starting to be adopted at an increasingly faster rate. Well, you know, if you think about this, and there are a lot of sessions here at the Cattlemen's College dealing with this, what I'd call the marketing revolution, changes and implementation of value-added marketing programs. You know, we're in the midst of all that. We have been for several years now, and it's going to be a lot of fun to be able to partake in that and hopefully be able to reap the benefits. Interest in sourcing and buying what I'll call bulletproof calves. You know, that's a really not an adequate term, because the person that does the best job possible preconditioning calves is still occasionally going to have one get sick, or the buyer's going to experience a sick calf now and then. You know, it's not 100%, but it does improve things a great deal. But people are just, many more people, I think, today are sick and tired of $30 and $40 medicine bills and, you know, a 5, 6, 7% death loss and a 50% pull rate. Evidence that sick cattle cost everyone continues to grow. A new data set comes out every few months that points this out. Go ahead, and I'll just share just a few of these with you. And I know a lot of you are going to be familiar with some of these data sets, so we won't spend a lot of time on them. This is the kind of the benchmark of the ranch to rail data, the Texas A&M program, published by McNeil and Dr. Ted McCollum. And you see here that just over a period of about 10 years, on average, sick calves performed at a lower rate in the feedlot in terms of weight gain. $87 difference in profitability, reduction of about 12% in percent choice on average, and then an increase in the percentage of cattle grading standard. And, of course, with the, I guess, more wider spread in the choice select and then select and standard we see today, that causes us a lot of problems on a carcass basis. Okay, this is the Noble Foundation data, and just 1 year's of data from their retained ownership program. Very similar results in that if the cattle had to be treated at least one time, 0.3 pound a day reduction in average daily gain, slight reduction in carcass weight, medicine cost of $20, and substantial increase in death losses you would expect in those treated cattle. Okay. And then the bottom line was there's almost a $100 bill difference in profitability in this data set. Go ahead, Clay. I really like this slide, Daryl Busby's data from Iowa State. And Iowa State's done a lot of good work with their feed out program over the last few years. And here in the green bars, you see net profitability here from cattle that did not have to be treated at all compared to cattle at the one extreme that had to be treated three or more times. And you can see the tremendous difference in profitability. And then, of course, as sickness increases, you know, you would expect that the cost of treating that BRD would go up and nearly over $50 a head in the extreme case. Okay? This is just the data set of Turk Stovall, who graduated from our department here a few years ago, where he ran about 500 head of heifers through our preconditioning facility there at Oklahoma State, and then fed those cattle at a commercial yard and tracked them through the plant. And he did one of these analyses where they compared no treatments at all throughout one treatment or more than one. And this is simply the USDA, U.S. percent choice. And you see a linear reduction in quality grade as those cattle have to be treated. And then the final little piece of evidence, this is from our recent steer feed out data there in Oklahoma. Here we've got healthy, never treated, treated one time, and then treated more than one time, or repulls. And very similar trend. The interesting thing is here, you know, perhaps these guys are doing a better job of pulling the cattle early, and so they didn't have a reduction in average daily gain, but certainly the cattle that had to be repulled did gain at a slower rate. Medicine cost, USDA choice, they just had to be treated once, reduced quality grade tremendously, and increased the percent cattle grading select. No roll. Go ahead, Clay. Okay, so go ahead, Clay, if you would, please. So the general concept, of course, and I really enjoyed the presentation from the last period, as it fits in well here with preconditioning. And what we're really trying to do here, if you look at this yellow line, is during this period around the time of weaning, is reduce those cattle's exposure to disease, and at the same time, go ahead, Clay, trying to increase this line that represents immunity, this green line. So with the vaccination program, with the balanced nutrition program, and so on, we're trying to raise this bar and lower this one by reducing stress and so on, by using some of the techniques that the, I'll call them old-timers, guys from back in the 60s and 70s were talking about conditioning steps. And so if anything we can do to bring those lines together and keep that green line above the yellow line as long as possible, theoretically, should tremendously reduce the cost to the beef industry if we can get that done. Okay, and so let's take a look at some data sets and just say, okay, show me the money or show me the evidence. Does it really work? And there's a few data sets available that I think indicate that in general, you know, you're going to have a disappointment once in a while, but in general, it works pretty well if you do what you said you were going to. There is limited data available still. One of the best data sets available is from back in the late 1990s or mid-90s from Matador Cattle Company, where they had about 1,200 head of cattle, where they compared a large ranching operation, and about half of those calves were preconditioned, whereas the other half were not and sent straight to the feed yard. And when that was, these 640-pound calves, the preconditioned calves that came to the feed yard later in a heavier weight, and those calves netted another $60 per head in the closeout, and those cattle were sold on a live basis. In fact, in both of these cases, the cattle were sold on a live basis. So any additional improvement in quality grade would not be reflected here in these profitability numbers. Okay. Okay. What about Wheat Pasture Graze Out case study? We've collaborated with the Noble Foundation on several occasions to deal with this issue over the last few years. And here we just did a real simple little project where we purchased about 150 calves from a preconditioning program there in Oklahoma. We call the Oklahoma Quality Beef Network. Very similar to Pfizer WeanVac program, very similar to Mariel Sure Health, where 45 days of weaning, double vaccination, castration, branding, and so on are required. Okay, and then at the same time, we purchased about 150 calves from different livestock markets on the same week throughout the southern part of Oklahoma. And our question was, you know, what is the value to the guy that's winter grazing wheat pasture? Those cattle at the OKC West livestock market were commingled into uniform weight classes, and that's just a picture of some of the cattle. This is the traditional cattle that were purchased throughout the region. 56% were bulls, 41% had horns. We didn't tell the buyer to restrict his purchases to calves that looked exactly like our cattle other than genetics, gender, and weight. And these are the livestock markets where those cattle were purchased. Okay, and then basically a pretty straightforward management procedure. The day after the OQBN calves arrived at the Noble Foundation, they were tagged, branded, dewormed. We did have a few eye problems in those cattle, and so they went ahead and treated those eye problems and turned them out on wheat the very next day. Okay, we treated the traditional calves the same way, except, of course, now we're implementing all those practices right in the middle of this stressful period of weaning and then turned them out the next day on wheat rather than keeping them up in a dry lot. Okay, and then these calves were brought back in 2 weeks later for revaccination. Go ahead. And this is just the performance results. There you see the average end date for the two groups of cattle in weight is very similar at in the high fours. And then here's the weight gain through March 27th. Traditional bulls, traditional steers gained about a pound a day, and preconditioned calves or process verified calves, however you want to think about that. Of course, early on, really outgained those other cattle as you would expect because they're not dealing with all of those stressful situations that the other cattle are. And then if you track them through the rest of the grazing period, it's kind of interesting. Here the bulls and the steers really start to pick up in performance and even surpass during the last part of the graze out period the preconditioned calf. And so they are starting to make up some ground and experience some compensatory gain. But if you look at the entire backgrounding or stocker phase, almost half a pound advantage in those preconditioned cattle because they got off to a good early start. Okay, here, just for your curiosity, we did have 2% treated for foot rot, pink eye. 9.5% of those cattle purchased in late February, early March did have to be treated. Of course, that'd be lower than industry standard, but we're talking about a time of the year when most of those cattle are probably weaned anyway and hardened somewhat. Dollars per treatment, pretty common at around $20 per head. Okay, and then we did another little fun little project where through our we collaborated with the Cattlemen's Association in this OQBN program that I've told you about, and we tracked about 3,400 head of cattle, about 1,700 through the OQBN program, and 1,700 that we really didn't know much of anything about. And we tracked these cattle for about 90 days after they arrived at the place of purchase. Okay? The first thing we did, I guess I need to step back, there's about 250 producers in the OQBN program that we surveyed, and we asked a few questions too because, cow-calf producer supply continues to be a problem. Even though we see a nice premium on the calves, getting those guys talked into preconditioned calves is still a challenge. One thing they're afraid of, as I've mentioned to you, is health problems at the home ranch. And so we thought we'd better at least get a little bit of data and see, okay, well, so what is the risk of those cattle getting sick at home? We think it's low, but let's see if we can document it. And of these producers, 115 of those guys said, nope, we didn't have any sickness at all at home, at least that we felt was bad enough that needed to be treated. So 115 of those, what is it, 135, 40, 155 observations here. And then 20 of those guys said, yeah, we had to treat a few calves at less than 1%. And then five of those folks indicated a 1 to 5% treatment or pull rate, and 5, 6 to 10%. And I consider those last two groups, those last 10 producers there, really to be a wreck and an extreme case where we really need to go back in and look at their management practice, maybe their handling techniques, their nutrition program, and help them figure out why they had such bad luck. Of course, at 6 to 15% pull rate, once those cattle have been moved or shipped, is really pretty good. But I think it's could be nearly classified as a wreck at home. Okay, and this is death loss. And as you would expect, a little death loss. In fact, 130 of these guys said no death loss. Five of them said less than 1%. And then there's those 10 guys with the wreck at 1 to 2% death loss. And just a little bit of fear of death loss goes a long ways with a cow-calf guy when the calf's worth, you know, $700 a head plus. I can't blame them. Okay? And so then we track these calves, 45 different sale lots, 8 different OQBN sales, 1,700 head of these OQBN certified cattle. And then at the same time, these were primarily large operations purchasing these cattle. We went, actually did a farm visit. And said, okay, if you're willing to work with us, what we'd like to do is identify another load of cattle coming in, sourced somewhere else that you don't know much about. They need to be about the same weight, the same gender, and the same breed classification. And so we were able to do that. And just kind of interesting, of those 45 lots, 32 of the cattle went straight back to wheat pasture, 9 went to the feed yard, and 2 went to dry wintering. We find in Oklahoma that preconditioned calf programs are really, really popular with our farmers that raise wheat and have to have cattle to graze it. Now, they don't consider themselves to be cattlemen, and so they're looking for cattle that are bulletproof, if you will, because they'd rather go to the basketball game or the football game than they would go out and treat sick calves. And so a lot of our wheat grazers, and particularly wheat farmers, bid a lot for these preconditioned calves that need to be turned right out on wheat there, generally sometime in November. Okay, here are the sales, and I've just got them indicated by letter down here at the bottom. And these are the number of calves that we tracked from each one of these markets, just one day in the market. And each one of these sales had sometimes 2 or 3 times this number of cattle certified through OQBN in the sale, but we were only able to make a deal, if you will, with this number of cattle based on the guy that bought them. You know, as you can imagine, a lot of people don't want to slow down long enough that time of the year to put up with some university guy that says, you know, can you keep more records for us and document all this and so on. And you can't blame them for that. But some of them, fortunately, were willing to work with us. Had one sale here that we were able to track 672 of those cattle, and then the lowest numbers would be there at the end at 55 head. Okay, so the bottom line, if you just plot the data by those livestock markets, even though they're small numbers, there's some revealing things here. And that is, you know, some of these groups are really doing a pretty good job. In fact, those two sales where we had few cattle had no pulls after they arrived within 90 days to the buyer's place. This is, let's see, would you flip back, Clay? I think it was E, wasn't it, that had 672 head? I believe that's right. Yeah, E, we tracked 672 head, and their pull rate was only 3%. And, you know, I say to that, congratulations to that livestock market. That is a tremendous improvement over industry average. And that program is working. It'd be nice if it were zero, but that program is working tremendously. But we've got a problem here. There are not a lot of cattle here, but if I had to, you know, pay $6, $7, $8 premium for a bunch of preconditioned calves, and I had a 20% pull rate and a 2 or 3% death loss, I would be unhappy. And we had some pretty substantially serious phone calls. I'll just put it that way, okay? And those problems need to be worked out. And that's a case where, you know, we can't just try to ignore that and sweep it under the rug in the industry. And I give credit to the livestock market there. They worked hard at trying to figure out what happened. Where did it fall apart? and how can we get better next time? And those are the kind of livestock markets that, that our producers really like to work with, because they can tell, you know, they do care, even though it requires a lot of follow-up. This is the, in the purple bar here, the percent pull rate or sickness, if you will, in those 1,700 OQBN calves, an average of 4.5% versus 24% on average of the cattle that we had no known history of their health program. And then death rate, 0.1% on average versus 3% death loss in the cattle that we didn't know much about. Okay? Okay, just a few more things. What is happening in the industry to improve suppliers' interest in sourcing these cattle and to improve buyers' interest in purchasing these cattle and recognizing the value by bidding more? Well, of course, you know, we have a lot of new programs available, PVPs and QSAs, which we didn't have 10 years ago. And a lot of, you know, MFA Health Track is probably one of the longer running programs, has had tremendous success there in the state of Missouri, and has documented a benefit, for example. You know, in 1978, there was only one branded beef program registered with USDA. Which one was that? Anybody know? Certified Angus Beef. Sure. How many are there today? 49. And I checked on, because I printed those slides earlier for you, I checked on this last night, and there's still 49 of those programs available on USDA's website. So tremendous increase in value-added marketing opportunities for people. And so if we can make the link all the way from the cow-calf operation to beef products, we should be able to improve quality of those products as well as reduce costs. Okay? You know, what about, particularly relative to some of the QSA, export verification, PVP programs? You know, there's a lot of interest now in source verification. You know, just McDonald's interest is a good example. If they stepped up tomorrow and said, no more cattle will we purchase unless you can tell us where they came from, our industry would change overnight. Do you remember how long did it take your livestock market to ask you to sign a form that you hadn't produced, or these cattle hadn't received any ruminant-derived protein products? I mean, that happened overnight. And I got it from my little hometown in southeast Kansas. I got a letter in about 2 weeks from my little livestock market saying, you need to sign this. And I'm thinking, dang, this is all the stuff I keep reading about, and, you know, and the teachers at OSU are talking about. This is a real deal. And it happened quickly. And it would happen if some of our larger purveyors step up and made that requirement. Market-driven or consumer-driven. Age verification, process verification, like the growth in the all-natural programs. What has changed relative to management? 45-day winning requirements. I credit Iowa State University for just producing a nice data set that shows that 30 or less is inferior relative to health compared to 45 days or more. It's as plain as night and day. We probably need some larger data sets to document that just to convince a few more people, but it is the industry standard now, and I think it's a good thing. Use of modified live vaccine, I'll let Robin talk about that in more detail. Revaccination is required now, whereas it didn't used to be. Nutritional recommendations, many of the programs have a strong effort to help producers deliver a balanced nutrition program so that, let's say, a severe copper deficiency doesn't limit the opportunity for those cattle to remain healthy. And then increase awareness of and the importance and value of records. And obviously, those programs, like the QSAs and the PVPs, are ones where that is quite obvious. Okay? Are buyers willing to pay? Just a couple more indications here. And go ahead, Clay. And you know, this is, I credit Pfizer and Colorado State and Mike King for just doing a fantastic job and leading the way by proving to the industry what's going on. And if you look here, what I've got here is a number of sell lots by health program sold through the Superior Livestock Auction. And I've got up to 2004. They have 1 year's worth of data. 2005 that I don't have incorporated here yet. But if you look where they started in 1994, cattle that were not weaned, not vaccinated, not certified, 88 lots. And then you look where they're at today, or in 2004, 5 lots. What happened in terms of cattle that were indicated to be vaccinated, but not certified, not weaned? It has declined substantially. And then look at the growth in the cattle that have been certified and vaccinated but not weaned, from 8% to right around 50%. And then we're seeing a steady increase in the growth in the Cadillac program, or 45 days weaning, certified, vaccination program, and so on. Not a tremendous increase, but it is a gradual and steady increase in the number of producers who are providing those cattle. Okay, so what about the premiums? You know, probably you've seen this published elsewhere, but let's just pay attention over here to the Cadillac program, the 45-day program, and you see, you know, kind of a flat growth here through the late 90s, and then a gradual increase in that premium at least until 2004. And maybe Robin can straighten me out, but I think that's like $6 or $7 in 05. Is that right? Anybody know? Right around $6 to $7, and so very nice premium recently. Dr. Clem Ward surveyed Texas cattle feeders member feed yards, and he said, based on your experience, what are preconditioned calves worth relative to how many of them get sick and versus non-preconditioned cattle? And they said 9% pulls versus 36% deads. They felt like there's a pretty substantial difference there. Choice is just as you'd see in those feed-out program data, 50% percent choice versus 35. And they said, just on their perception, that those cattle were worth at least $5 a hundredweight more, and the range was 0 to 10. Okay? Just a couple other things to consider, you know, it is a commitment by the cow-calf producer to launch a program like this if he's not already doing it. Commitment in terms of time, labor, facilities, and so on. And it's just kind of a quick budget, and I changed my budget that you have printed out there because when I produced that one, corn was still $2.50 a bushel, and so we increased the feed cost a little bit. But it's going to cost this producer around $70. So on a 5-weight calf, you know, he has to have a pretty substantial premium, yes, but I want you to consider, you know, have a lot of discussions with people about, you know, if you take let's say a 5-weight calf and a $5 hundredweight premium, that's $25. And you're telling me I'm going to spend almost $70? But I think what we've discovered and seen through the our producers in Oklahoma is that you have got to achieve cost-efficient weight gain during that period. And so if you have a $25 head premium and 70 to 100 more pounds to sell, if the calves, say, gain 2 pounds a day, then you've got an increase in gross margin of $80, $90, or $100 per head. And so you can't just use the premium alone to evaluate a program like that. You have to consider the gain, cost-efficient gain, and those costs as well as a premium. Clay, do we have time for a few questions? Thank you very much, and I'll be glad to try to answer a question or two if there are any. Sure. For treatment, if one gets sick, well, gosh, you know, okay, his question was Cadillac program for treatment, and where's Robin? Robin? Okay, you know, most all the problems in the livestock field are created by veterinarians as far as nutritionists are concerned, and so I'm going to let Robin answer that question, but actually I do need to pass that off on him, since, you know, my expertise is nutrition, and so I wouldn't pretend to know how to answer that question appropriately. Good question, and I'm sure Robin will address it for you. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Kent, hi.
David, what's your great difference between these unweaned calves and 45-day weaned calves for the breeders when they come down? Go ahead with that.
What is our what difference? I didn't catch the middle of it.
Unweaned calves, they go
shrink. That, you know, you would think you would have an advantage there, particularly if you go into a livestock market and they have feed pens available. And most of the livestock markets we've dealt with in Oklahoma, when they're putting on a special sale, if you will, do provide feed to those cattle. And fortunately, they know how to eat. And so we haven't studied that. It's a difficult thing to study, shrink, that is, preconditioned versus non, because there are so many variables. But just on the cases we've seen, yeah, you know, I think 1 to 2% advantage in shrink is certainly logical. Does that match with your observations? You guys have done more of that probably than we have. Less? 4% advantage? Okay. Well, I guess I could buy that. Anyone else? Clay, thank you.
Yep. Give David a round of applause for his great presentation. We sure appreciate him coming out today. Here's a little token of our appreciation.